We've got tickets to the Freedom 250 Grand Prix in 1 hour at 4 o'clock on Grant and Danny. Show's brought to you today and every day by the law firm Condori and Murad.
Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com. And be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
I just saw that Bill Rasmussen passed away, the co-founder of ESPN. Died at 93 years old. So first things first, you get to 93, you lived a pretty good run.
Heck yeah.
I don't know about the details of his passing, but thinking about his family and friends for sure, that's a name that is synonymous, though, with sports and television. And ESPN is largely responsible. As much as I like to beat up on the state of ESPN today, even still, I mean, I watch it as much or more than any channel that I watch.
I was going to say, I think it's fair to beat up. That doesn't change the impact, man.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, none of us, I think I can speak for everyone, would be the same amount of fan or the same level of fan if not for that network. And I can't personally fathom a world where it didn't exist. It did throughout the entirety of my childhood. I mean, it was probably still in its infancy and young, but when I was 8 or 9 years old, that's all I watched was SportsCenter and every show that they had, I was glued to. That was the only thing that was on the TV in my room all the time. Channel 25, ESPN. Bill Rasmussen, who was in charge of the whole thing getting off the ground, passing away today at 93.
People sleep, if you're younger, probably even your age, maybe even below GP, on, because by the time you got to be a sports fan, it was like, yep, oh yeah, ESPN, you know, the cable 24-hour sports station, you know, that thing, that didn't exist. Imagine going from a BC to an AD with that, where you go, hey, it's the late 70s, I know nobody has cable. And I know nobody has an appetite for this thing, but just wait, they will. And all the risk and all the venture and all the idea of, like, here's what we're going to start and begin. They didn't have access to the highlights at first. You know what I mean? Like, you're sitting there fighting tooth and nail to figure out how we're going to populate this network that's going to be on all day long and into the night and, you know, 24 hours worth. And he had a vision for it. His family had a vision for it. I think there's another business partner there as well. But it went from this fringe weird thing where they're showing like the different kinds of dog catching frisbees and all sorts of different weird sports on the fringe, a lot of logger competitions.
ESPN Atheocho, man.
Yeah, to the most definitive, as big as, if not bigger than the sports that they were covering, network. Impossible to imagine how they went there.
The sports took off too. I mean, who knows, like eventually something else comes along or they would have gotten where they got to. But ESPN helped them be on a rocket ship, football, basketball, baseball, hockey, any of the sports. The fandom of all of those games grew. The access was so important in that. Reading from ESPN's story here, it was a moment for risk-taking. In the late 1970s, not many people thought an around-the-clock cable sports network had any chance. Bill Rasmussen, who had just been fired as communications director of the New England Whalers, was one of them. He maxed out his credit card, and with his $9,000 advance, acquired valuable space on a communications satellite. Think about that. He's like, you know what? Let's do this. Sports all the time. And people kind of laughed at him. Thinking about the early days of ESPN is not that different probably than the early days of like MTV.
Yeah.
And what it initially was. The earliest days of MTV was actual music videos.
With the occasional like brief interlude for like a minute or two. But it's like, okay, now back to the videos.
And early ESPN was not even necessarily just the games, but the highlights and SportsCenter was it. I mean, every day before school, I would sit there while eating breakfast, and you would catch up on everything that happened the night before. Old guy radio here, but I mean, there was no just scrolling your phone or looking at the highlights. Nowadays, if there's a boxing match or something that I didn't watch, what will I do? I'll get on Twitter, I'll do a quick search, and or go to the account that I know will be talking about it, and I'll see the 12-second clip of the knockout or whatever. Back then, you just had to wait for your 30-minute sports center to get to everything because there was no other way to do it. And so it is obviously very different. The world has changed. It's not as necessary now, but pretty amazing just what an impact his idea had on so many of our lives.
100%. And again, I'm old enough to remember I'm part of that last generation that lived without cable and then with it. And now, of course, moved into every other option and streaming and satellite and whatever you want to do. But before cable was ubiquitous, almost a decade before, he was like, we're going to do this thing on cable. What? What is that?
Yeah.
What even is that for most of the households or satellite or whatever? Nobody had that. You had the whatever local station you could get, you got it. And it was a big deal.
What was your favorite ESPN programming growing up or as ever?
The definitive, most important program as far as I'm concerned, Sunday NFL countdown. Yeah. It is quite simply, you didn't know what happened in the other games. You'd see a score bug. I remember it was novelty and it was amazing when they'd break in with the occasional highlight. Let's go, you know, back to the studio and tell you what's going on in the Giants Saints game or whatever. But it wasn't until that night where you had any idea of how it looked or what happened, where you'd go, you had to sit down and watch it. You go, Dad, come in here, look at this fumble, or look at this boneheaded play, or look at this unbelievable thing. And it had to be, it was definitive and perfect.
Right.
The Berman, Tom Jackson, the chemistry between the two guys, going through all the highlights, because they were delivering it to you for the first time.
I told you this last time it came up randomly on the show, but they brought that back, and it's now on the app, and mm-hmm. I still watch it every weekend. It's not with Tom Jackson, obviously, but it's Chris Berman and Booger McFarlane. And they've recreated, but it's still the pace and the music and the, you know, yep. Berman at his schwammiest, you know, yep. where he's like, go to Landover, where the Commanders are hosting the Cowboys. Into the end zone, 7 yards. Bill, Jacory Kroski-Merritt, he's got 3 touchdowns from, you know, Louisville. And they do the Louisville. Whole bit.
Yeah.
That show, though, I'm with you. I think, for me, was probably my favorite.
It was the best. Baseball Tonight, was a definitive.
Baseball Tonight, there was a time where it was fantastic.
Uh-huh.
A lot of these shows are still around in different variations, and they're not as good. I don't know why that is, if there's a nostalgia to it, we're building it up in our heads or what, but, like, I also think a lot more money and time and energy went into Baseball Tonight 30 years ago than now.
I think that's a huge part of it, but what really happened, what made everybody change, was the highlight and the information became easier to get. They had it. They held the cards. The local sports reporter held the cards, right? So the highlight machine, George Michael Sports Machine or Glenn Brenner, some of the greats around here, the icons, they knew what happened and then they were going to deliver to you. And I'm sitting there going, hey, what happened in that game? I don't know yet. Now I know. And the fact that whether it's on my cell phone or my computer or the access that I've got, that's what killed those shows in a way to me. Where, again, I'm watching a baseball game, Wednesday Night Baseball, with John Miller and the great Joe Morgan doing games, and I didn't know what happened in the rest of the league. Now, if I'm the slightest bit curious, I have an app for it, I have a website for it, I have a network for it where I can watch live look-ins. That's just different. That's what killed those shows.
The live look-in element of ESPN, too, was huge in 98 for me in the home run chase.
Oh, yeah, dude.
When McGuire and Sosa were chasing down the home run record of Roger Maris. That was one of the first times I can remember. That summer, I turned 10 in May. And they would just do you would sit on ESPN mm-hmm. because someone was at the desk, and they would take you out there for the at-bat. And how they got the rights and played traffic cop nowadays, I'm not really sure. It may not go the same way, but very, very cool the way they pulled that off. By the way, the Nats, the Texas Rangers tonight at 8:05, 5 hours from right now, right here on The Fan. Pregame with Charlie and Dave this evening right around 7:40. If you want to listen to that on your flagship home for the Nationals. All of our Nats coverage today, we'll be talking about the C.J. Abrams position change later in the show. Going to be brought to you by Xfinity. Score the most reliable Wi-Fi, one price, 5 years, guaranteed. Xfinity, imagine that. So the story out of the NFL about a team being based internationally full-time trickles out today based on a Roger Goodell comment in an interview that he did. So he was being interviewed by a German media outlet called RTLN TV. I'm just going to say German TV.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, but he was on this channel in Germany talking about the game internationally, and he suggested that there's no doubt that an NFL team will be based outside of the United States at some point during his lifetime. There's no doubt is what he said. At some point, there will be NFL teams outside the USA, Goodell told this channel. I have no doubt that this will happen one day. We know the league's international profile is growing big time, and it does every single year. In fact, this year, the league voted to play as many as 10 international games per season outside of the States now. And that'll be the first time this happened in 2027. We're going to get up to 10 from 8 previous to this calendar year. The other vote that happened that kind of was under the radar but was really important in this regard was the league voted, and teams have now been stripped the ability to protect home games from international play. So I don't know the exact specifics on this, but the way I read this is if you're the Commanders and Josh Harris, you could say, you're not sending us and the Cowboys in our home, Northwest Stadium game internationally. Can't have it. That's the game we're protecting. Well, now teams are no longer allowed to protect that division game against the rival in their stadium. So that's how you get like the Rams and the 49ers going to Australia. That's how you get some of the really good ones, the Packers and the Eagles in Brazil, or you know, whatever the other games are that are marquee. Because it used to be you just send the Jaguars and the Browns and these crappy teams for two last place clubs playing in London. And they go, you know, if we really want to hook people, we need the Chiefs playing the Bills. We need the you know, Bengals at 7-2 taking on the Steelers in a rivalry. And so the teams can't actually say no now. Plus, we're up to 10 international games a year. So the momentum keeps going more and more that way. But the logistics have always suggested that you're never going to be able to base a team outside of the States full time. And Goodell says, oh, it's going to happen. And he has no doubt about it.
So that could mean a lot of things. Mexico City, Toronto, Calgary, Vancouver, or London, Portugal, Barcelona, or excuse me, Barcelona.
But
or,
isn't that, like, even if it's Mexico City, I think that still qualifies as a massive deal.
Well, it does, but that's Western Hemisphere or Northern Hemisphere. Like, that's the same continent. That's not that big of a deal. They already played some games there. That's, you know, it's a little bit south of, south and east of Arizona, where you're already going to play probably.
You're saying it feels more like realignment into another NFL city.
Yeah, that's not that huge a deal.
The ruination of the sport based on the logistics of travel.
Indeed. So, like, if you're going to Dublin, Ireland, that's a dramatic difference than if you're going to Toronto internationally. And I think that's what they're talking about. It's overseas. It's, you know, the difference potentially of 6, 7, 8, 9 hours if you're on the West Coast for some of these places across the Atlantic. And to me, I would say it has to be in the Northern Hemisphere. So you think of the equator line where they're already going to go into Argentina. I think they're going to play... I can't remember if they played a game they played a game in Brazil. So that's below the hemisphere. I think that's too huge of a deal. It's a different season. Everything about it's different. It's totally topsy turvy. And then kind of past that prime meridian line that goes through, you know, England, sort of
you're
Western Europe.
Geography class.
But that's kind of my point here is if you go beyond those things, it's now like, all right, you're going to fly Monday, but it's really Tuesday there. And when you land, it's going to be yesterday and your body clocks and everything else. And this is just a regular week of the season. Just seems too much to do beyond a special occasion.
I'll get back to the topic at hand in a second, but speaking of the international travel and how insane it is, have you seen the difference between the Rams and the 49ers for how they're going to handle the Australia game? I think this is crazy. So one of the teams, I believe it is the 49ers, are going out there way early. So they're going to be out there for a week, basically.
Trying to acclimate.
Exactly. They're going to go out. They're going to practice there. They're going to live there. They're going to just chill. And they're going to try to see some koala bears and get bitten by spiders and do all that stuff.
There's so many of those.
The Rams are acting like they're playing the game in D.C. They're flying out the night before, like over, I mean, you can't fly in a night.
So it's like 3 nights before almost, yeah.
Exactly. But it's like, what is that, Tobes? You live there. It was like 17-hour flight or whatever. It's asinine. But they're going to land, basically, get off the plane, go to bed, wake up, play the game, and then fly back. Like, they're acting like it's a cross-country flight. And so whatever happens in the game, people are going to have the takeaway of that team did it right. The 49ers acclimated, or they were there too long. The Rams, by not taking it overly seriously and just business as usual and sleeping on the plane, because they get the ginormous plane and everyone has the room to lay out and everyone will be in a bed that, you know, basically rolls backwards. I'm sure they'll spare no expense. Kroenke's going to take care of the guys. But they're going to just get off the plane, play football, come back. And so whoever wins will say that that's the way to do it. But I do find it completely fascinating to see those two teams juxtaposed and how they're handling
it. Well, there's no settled science on it, right? I mean, I remember there's been a million debates as to what you do when you go play Denver. Do you fly in at, you know, the last possible second you can and, you know, expose yourself the least amount to the altitude and less oxygen? Or do you go there as early as you possibly can to acclimate to it?
Teams still debate that all the time.
And nobody knows the answer, right? There's no one way to do it.
I do feel like, personally, the more you can adjust, the better. Not just from a time zone standpoint, but getting over there. If you can set up camp and just be there, the same way when Washington, remember, played, like went out to the West Coast to play the Cardinals and some other team back-to-back, they just stayed out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think the idea of just being there, posting up, no distractions, being in a hotel, having practice every day, you know, you're there for 5 days, so your body clock's adjusted. I'm Team 49ers way of doing it, but I guess we'll find out.
Seriously. Yeah, I mean, in, you know, if one team looks a little sluggish, a little slow, or looks good, is it because of the flight, or is it because the 49ers have practice near power lines? We won't know.
I had a couple of people come up to me today, and shout out if you're listening. They're big listeners, it sounds like. But they were like, have you thought about all the data centers around Ashburn? And I was like, no. They're like, do you think all the data centers are why the Commanders get hurt so much? And I was like, so we have the 49ers have their
substation.
And now the data centers are why the Commanders are getting hurt. I have not heard that one. That's new.
But it can't just be like there's a data center in your county. Like when you look at that 49ers practice footage, you're like, nice pass by Brock Purdy. And in the background, as the ball's flying in the air, it's nothing but this giant substation takes up the entire background of the picture.
And it's just crackling electricity and stuff.
You can hear the buzz of it.
There's a golf course I play at. The one time every year that I play golf.
The golf course.
Meadows Farms, it's called, in Orange, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
It's where I do the Jermaine Bushrod charity golf tournament. But there's like power lines over top of all the holes and stuff. And it's just kind of funny because when you're out there, the entire time you can just hear the zzzz.
Just power.
That's all it is power.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm like George Kittle when I'm out there. I'm just like, my knee starts hurting or something. I don't know. But anyway, back to this idea of playing these international games, not just 8 to 10 at a time, but a team actually being based outside of the United States. Here's what I think this is. I think this is posturing from the league in a way to get what they need from the cities that either already have teams or that want teams in a world where they're going to expand or Major League Baseball style, like replace a city with another one or what have you. That's to me what this is it the league's bluffing because they want stadium deals and they want the cities that have the stadium deals to feel some pressure. We will take your team and we will move it to London. You know, we will get the best stadium ever built in another country where we don't have to worry about the financials at all. I think that's really what this is.
That, at the core of it, it's that.
By the way, there's only like one more team right now that's going to be sold anytime in the near future, which is, I think, the Baltimore Ravens, potentially, in the next bunch of years, I guess, could be, like, the last team of the, like, young ownerships that have taken over, like, if you're looking at it. But beyond that, like, who's moving? None of these teams are moving. There's no teams coming or going. There's a club of 32 people that get to own these things, and unless somebody sells, I don't know, like, how do you get in on the game? They're not adding a new team. So I think this is just their way of saying, hey, when we tell you you need a new stadium, you better get a new stadium because Europe is waiting. That's what I think this is.
I think there's something to that, but I think the other part of it is they love to have international stuff. I mean, they're already showing you by how many games they're just going to keep adding. They want those markets. They see the fervor. They see the incredible passion of these fan bases. Where if you go to a Manchester City game and you're wearing red, the cops are like, "Yeah, we can't protect you. Good luck." Like, you might get your brains beat in. They want access to that. They want these spending, avid, you know, if you even just get a taste of it, you're on easy street. It's found money as far as they're concerned. So I think it's two parts. One, leverage, the part I hadn't really thought about that, but it makes good sense. But the other part is there are only so many more football fans that you can find here in the United States.
Well, and one other item related to that, if you're talking about holding the events outside of the United States, so there's been a lot of talk about a Super Bowl internationally.
Mm-hmm.
And Goodell went on record as basically saying, we're not going to have a Super Bowl outside of the United States unless there's a team that plays in that city. Like the Super Bowls we like to give to our team cities. Because that would be pretty crappy. If you're like, hey, I know there's a huge line of everyone here that has the teams that want the Super Bowl.
But we're doing it at Wembley Stadium.
We're going to London.
Yeah.
So his point is, I'm not saying no to a Super Bowl internationally. But it's not going to happen until there is a team. The guy that runs, his name's Peter O'Reilly, the NFL's executive VP of business, international events, said something to the effect of it's not a front burner issue, which is being taken to mean we'll talk about this when there's a team over there.
Uh-huh.
And then they'll get their Super Bowl. Not unlike Washington getting their new stadium and now the Super Bowl follows. If you build it, Super Bowl comes kind of thing. But I think that you're onto something with like they want to do more events, but you're capped at what kind of and how many of the big events you could do if you don't have a team there, because all the other teams are going to be putting their hand out going, what about us,
dude? Right. What about our turn?
We want the draft. Why would you put it in Europe when we haven't had our draft in our city, which is a institution, you know, pillar city for the NFL.
So I think there's going to be a team in London before I'm toes up in the ground. I think that's what's coming.
I do not. Give me, like, would you say within the next 20 years?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because it went from, look at this crazy weird novelty. We're going to play one game in Mexico City for San Francisco to, oh yeah, you guys go to Australia, you guys are in Germany, you guys will, you know, be in Bulgaria in like an hour and a half. We're just going everywhere, man. We're just, it's a traveling road show. Oh, yeah, you guys go to Buenos Aires and you can't get it on Peacock, Danny. We're going to do all that stuff. I think that's what they want.
I don't think there will be a team in London ever. If you told me there'd be a team in like Mexico City you referenced earlier, uh-huh. there that's way more likely, but I'd still say no. I would bet against, let's not say in our lifetime, let's say in 20 years, you're saying there will be an international team.
Yes.
I think the logistics make it really hard.
Oh, I'm sure of that. Because I think it's to me, if I'm on any kind of committee, they point me to something, I'll go, no, that's a non-starter. It's stupid. Imagine being a team from San Francisco, Los Angeles, Seattle, which, you know, used to be San Diego, but anybody out west, even Denver in the middle of the west, even like anybody in the middle of the country, those flights are outrageous. You can't do that. And they'll go, thanks so much. There's more money there. What else you got? Next item on the agenda. We're doing it.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067 is the number. So Danny says, yes, the NFL will have a team playing its games full-time internationally in the next 20 years. I'm on the other side. I say absolutely not happening, no way. Who you with? Pick a side here. G&D on the Fan. With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. We are talking NFL football and international play. Get back into training camp. Was out at practice today. Toby was out there for the radio station as well. All of our camp coverage brought to you by Paul Henry's Window Installation, paulhenryswindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. Question is, will there be a team that is based full-time outside of the United States over the next 20 years? Roger Goodell says there's no doubt about it. Says it's absolutely happening in a interview he did with German television. I don't see it. I think it's posturing. I think in a lot of ways it's a kick to the butt to any of the teams in the States to do whatever the league wants, whether that be stadium deals or otherwise, because they've got this option that they really like. This is the monster under the bed. But it's not going to work. It doesn't make sense. It's just not practical, and players aren't going to want to sign for or play for that team. It'll be at an inherent disadvantage. But Danny, you think it's going to happen in the next 20 years?
I do. The same way that they've disregarded what players want with Thursday night football, some of the travel things that they've imposed, they've said, thanks for your complaint. We really appreciate it. Now get on the plane and go play.
But players don't have to sign to play on Thursday night football. What player is signing a deal for the same money to be based overseas for the entirety of the season and or to have to travel for, let's say, 3-4 weeks at a time to get those home games in away from their family?
It's a great question. I would say the same thing about why wouldn't someone sign in Miami and go and sign in Green Bay instead? You know, why would an NBA player sign in Utah when they could sign in New York? I mean, it is a disadvantage in general, but it's with collective bargaining and, you know, the salary cap and everybody's kind of equal, the money will be the money. I mean, again, I'm with you. Logistics are awful. And what it should be is a non-starter, but I don't see it that way. I think it's real.
Let's go to Steve in Fairfax to get started. You can listen to the show on 106.7. You can watch us on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube channel. Of course, we are on in Richmond, AM 910, FM 105.1. What's up, Steve? How are you?
Doing good, boys. How are you guys doing?
Good, buddy.
So I don't think it's going to happen. I think the need for NFL football every Sunday here in the stateside is just so great. I would probably think expansion would happen closer to home as opposed to overseas. I mean, it's kind of like you guys said, like, these cities are fighting for these franchises. They know they're money makers. You know, I just don't see how you wouldn't expand, you know, stateside first and then eventually do that. But I would think the market here stateside, because this is our game. This is not a, you know, international game. It's a North American game that was created here and it's played here usually. So I would think expansion would happen at home before it happened away.
I think you're right about that. I wonder about, when he says expansion, I'm guessing he just means more teams and more cities.
Just add, say for example, you add two more teams. The next biggest population city that doesn't have a team is San Antonio. I'm making that one up. So I'm not making up the city, but it's far enough away from Dallas, far enough away from Houston, far enough away from anything in Arizona or whatever. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere. San Antonio could have a team. So who's their partner team? Is it London or do you have to go to Portland?
I'll give you two right now. St. Louis should still have a team.
There you go.
San Diego should still have a team.
There you go.
You don't think those teams, those cities would go head over heels to bring teams back? The San Diego, I guess you couldn't call them the Chargers, although maybe you would, and then L.A. would get a new name or something. But, you know, St. Louis, I think the way Austin is growing and the mm-hmm. way football is crazy in Texas, it'd be a little weird to have three teams in Texas maybe, but you mentioned San Antonio. There are a bunch of monster cities in this country where I would much prefer to see a new team, and same I agree. Here. If you're growing this thing into more teams, which I don't think they should, I think 32 is a good number. Yeah, there are cities that are lined up, ready to go with diehard football fans. Take care of them. But your point is, you got change in the United States that you're not getting. You got buckets of money like you just robbed a bank internationally waiting to be handed over. Justin's in Bethesda. What's up, Justin? How are you?
From Bethesda!
Hey, buddy.
Well, I think they're going to start in Canada and Mexico first. I agree with Danny, but I think once these new TV deals are signed, then they're going to start going overseas because they get packages like a Netflix-only international pack, broadcast package for the home games.
Appreciate you, buddy. Your phone sounds a little rough. It's hard to make out. Sounds like he's saying there is streaming opportunities where you could, based on having teams internationally, like Netflix is the home of the UK team or whatever, which is interesting. I think you could still do that with teams in the States, but... certainly makes it more appealing now that you can stream all over the world.
So, or it was, what I thought he was getting at was, if you'd like to watch any international game, that's on Amazon Prime, or that one's on Netflix. So, meaning, when we play in Australia, Rio de Janeiro, Sao Paulo, Brazil, Frankfurt, Germany, all the international games are on that streaming channel. So, I don't know if that's necessarily related or mutually exclusive to having a team internationally, but I do see it going that way, where everybody's going to come up with creative streaming packages are different ways for like one big service to take a new bite out of their coverage because there's a finite number of games, 16 times 16, right? Per week. And, you know, everybody's got their, or 17 rather, you got those number of games. So here's a group of 11 of them. That's, you know, a certain Thursday night football. Here's a group of 17. That's Monday night football. So we're biting off little parts of it. And then the international games, if there's 10 of them, that's only streaming on whatever.
They could sell the package.
Yeah.
I just don't get why you can't already do that, but I certainly understand the point, I suppose, bigger picture. Reggie just slid into my DMs on Instagram, Grant H.
Provocative.
Paulson. Yeah, very provocative here. He is hitting on the show, it looks like. Grant H. Paulson on IG. He says, no team in London or anywhere else. Logistics stink. Currency exchange? Do I get paid in euros or dollars? Do I relocate my family? Political unrest. Travel is a mess. TV schedule. It's just shooting from the hip here. Yeah.
These are different things. Yeah. I agree with all those, by the way.
All of those things make it unlikely.
But it's the same way with like players and different tax rates for different states. And again, I'm telling you, those logistics are like away from camera, and those things get figured out.
Yes, I would just say when you reference that or you talk about like, why does anyone play in Utah? That's like the difference between Utah versus Miami or something, let's say, is like a 4 out of 10. Whereas the difference between Miami and London is like a 56 out of 10.
Sure.
It's a sliding scale there when you're still in the States and you can just, like, there's Nats players, I know, whose families, like, don't join them until after the school year. And they're just staying a couple states over. The wife will fly in for a trip and stay in the hotel here or there. But for the most part, like, they don't see their kids for a few weeks, and that stinks. It's very, very different than if everyone had to do something like that and that was just the norm for the entire team every season. Let's go to Alex in Vieta. What's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for taking my call. So,
Alex, have you ever been to the Vienna Inn?
Of course.
All right. I just wanted to make sure.
Football games every Friday night.
Oh, really? So you go to the Oakton Cougars game and then you go right over to the Vienna Inn to talk about the matchup?
Well, when my son was playing for him, I sure did.
Let's go.
I love that.
Yes. But yeah, the Vienna Inn is awesome and they don't hire men to serve for some reason, but that's not a bad thing when you're a middle-aged dude like me.
I didn't know about that. That's an interesting development.
That's interesting.
Danny sleeps on the Vienna Inn, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure I do.
I just don't think you've ever been.
How dare you? How dare you?
it's worth the trip out to suburbia for you. I promise.
What do you got?
I just don't see how the stadium funding works. The NFL teams do not like paying for their own stadiums. The soccer clubs in Europe all have to shell out for their stadiums. There's no way that an NFL team coming to town for 9 dates a year is going to get the $1 billion or €1 billion that it would take to get a stadium paid for. And you would not ever be able to leverage that and say, if you don't build us a stadium, we'll leave, which teams here do all the time. If you tried that in Europe, they would just say, go.
Yeah, how would that work even?
So I'll do my best.
Get into that.
Yeah, I'll do my best. So think of it this way. You know when they advertise for your cell phone company that you happen to have that you've been paying money to for 10 years, and they go, new customers get this, 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 and this. And I'm going, well, wait a minute. I'd like to get that. All I've ever done is paid you every month so much money all the time. And do I get it? The answer is no. They'll do whatever they have to do to get in there.
Yeah.
Because it's a new mine that they're digging. The mines they've already dug here, I don't need to give you special treatment. You guys already know how great the product is. They're going to go give blue magic to those folks for the first time over there. And you will take a loss initially for the unbelievable amount of windfall that's coming.
I was going to go the other way. I actually think they'd build the NFL stadium there for the team to get the NFL there.
Maybe. Honestly,
you're going more with the owners would do what they have to do to be there because of the money.
Because the league will basically say, listen, we're going to take.
By the way, the league would help you a lot.
We'll take a little loss here for a short amount of time. But imagine continents and tens of millions of people being introduced to our product. All it takes is for people to see our product, then it goes like hotcakes. It'll be fine. All we have to do is get over there.
Double play is next. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. G&D on the Fan. Coming up in 15 minutes on Grant and Danny, somebody is winning Freedom 250 Grand Prix tickets right here on the Fan. We've got those tickets for you all week long. Let's get to our double play. Sponsored by FH Fur for 45 years, FH Fur set the standard for premium comfort. To celebrate, get 0% financing for 72 months on a qualifying new system purchase, plus a premium EnviroAir IAQ 5-inch filter, absolutely free. FH Fur plumbing, heating, AC, and electrical, absolutely the best.
So, listen, Darius won't have heard of any of these things. This is out of something called the DC Universe. DC Universe, okay, DC Comics. There have been a lot of misses. We all know that. You know that. I know that. Everybody knows that.
Okay? What?
Now, hold on, Mr. John. It's been a lot of things that they were like, listen, you don't know these characters, but get to know them in a hurry and care about them. And it's a miss.
Okay? And we'll have seven of them in a movie at once.
Yeah, it's too jumbled. It's too much. They tried to fast track what Marvel spent years building. And then, frankly, Marvel has cut some corners lately on their own, although Marvel's making a big comeback. But here's the point. Whisper quiet. Sneaky, down low, very incrementally, DC is trying to make a comeback here. Peacemaker, starring John Cena, really good, really entertaining. The exact right tone that it needs to be. Funny, dark, serious enough that it's like, okay, there's some gravity to this. It matters. You get some pretty gory things. Some people are getting blown up in the whole thing, but it's a really, really good show. Again, heavy buy recommendation on Peacemaker. HBO just premiered Lanterns this past Sunday. So what's today? Tuesday? Lanterns stars Kyle Chandler. You remember him as the head coach of Friday Night Lights. He's been in a bunch of stuff. He's really good. He plays an aging Hal Jordan who's cranky and pissed off and annoyed and kind of over all of it.
Who is Hal Jordan?
The Green Lantern.
Okay.
Okay, so you're going to have questions, and I'll do my best to answer them.
Nah, I'm good.
No, hold on. You're familiar with the Green Lantern. He's got a ring, and he can whatever he wants to have happen, he can make it happen.
I was good when you said DC and not Batman, so I'm in Darius's camp. You can keep going, but I don't have any questions.
I saw curiosity. I saw that spark in your eyes. Reporter Paulson was on it.
I do like Kyle Chandler.
Yeah, he's really good in this role. So you don't need to know much about the the lore, as the young people say, are kind of the story. They drop you right in, and then you're kind of explaining. You realize what we're in for here. This is aging Hal Jordan, a.k.a. Kyle Chandler, just gruff and ticked off and snarky and sarcastic and like a little bit drunk, mad at everybody all the time. And that's pretty much what we have in the first show. He's training a guy that's eventually going to take his place. And so there's some awkwardness therein. Kelly MacDonald is in the show. You would recognize her from everything. She's aggressively Scottish, but does American accents incredibly well. She was in No Country for Old Men. She played Llewellyn Moss's wife in that film. She was in Boardwalk Empire. She's really, really good. She's in the show, and you're kind of starting to see the universe as it's built. Only one episode in. I really enjoyed it, though. It hooked me in. But that's kind of the point here, is DC has a long way to go. They're not even playing the same sport as Marvel at this point. Not only are they not in the same ballpark, they're not playing the same sport.
They were relegated.
They were relegated, but they're trying, and they're going about it, and they pretty much bet really, really big on a trailer you and I have seen, Clayface, which is, they do kind of this dark, brooding thing anyway, trying to copy Christopher Nolan's Batman, and they failed. They're going for it here with, like, the first comic book horror movie, and it looks pretty good.
It does.
That's what I got for you.
It's just too much. I mean, everything's so dark, like, shot dark, is dark. It's just not for me, but I stopped short of clubbing them because they gave me Batman, which is the greatest trilogy of all the trilogies, the greatest superhero movies that we have, thanks to Christopher Nolan. And I would say Spider-Man gives it a run for its money. Like, the four Spideys, the Tom Holland Spideys, are outstanding. That's probably my second favorite series of films at this point. But that's Marvel's best offering. They've had really good ones. Captain America was great. I'm really big on the Iron Man movies. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Avengers movies are hard to beat. So, Marvel, 57 on the scoreboard.
Yep.
DC has a field goal. It's 3, but that Batman field goal was really, really good.
Well,
that was a Drew Stevens 71-yarder.
But even still, the Batman stuff, the Christopher Nolan trilogy, they're kind of like, because they can't get any of those guys back to do any of the Batman stuff.
Oh, yeah, it's over.
It stands alone, so they're like, what about this stuff and all that? And it's all rushed and it was bad. I think they've got something here. I don't know where they go with it. I don't know what they're going to do. I'm just telling you, they're trying, and I appreciate the effort.
Good hustle. Marvel can get some heat on this, too. I know Darius will disagree here. I get annoyed by the I've got to watch a TV show to watch a movie thing, too. Enough with that. Like, you haven't seen WandaVision? Why didn't you watch WandaVision? I don't know, because it's not a movie in the theater that I need to watch.
That's absolutely ludicrous.
Leave me alone.
Tough.
So Marvel's doing this bit. Where I just saw what the new Avengers is.
So you haven't seen Loki?
No, of course not.
Yeah.
Is it a Marvel TV show? Does it take a bunch of hours?
No, it doesn't.
That's absolutely ludicrous.
It doesn't take a bunch of hours.
But I was doing a deep dive on the Avengers flick that's coming out this winter. It's like, here are all the things you should watch before that. And I have the homework of now watching 4 TV series. Get away from me. Like, that's so ridiculous. Go away.
Mm.
Don't do that.
Mm.
So stop with the TV shows before the movies thing. That's absurd. Like, to enjoy Spider-Man, you have to watch Miles Morales and this, and your kids have, hopefully you have kids. Sorry, everyone that doesn't, because you need to watch Spidey and His Amazing Friends, Season 3, Episode 2. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
I cannot co-sign that.
I know.
The leaving the nuggets in different places is awesome.
It's time for my double play. This one is tough for me. The University of Michigan is not going to use letter grades for freshmen next fall. Did you see this story?
I did see this.
What are we doing? You're just making it so easy for the tough guys that just want to scream about, like,
everybody gets a trophy.
Exactly. Yep. The University of Michigan is trying a new approach to curb the mental health crisis among college-age students. Now, I'm not going to sit here and make fun of mental health. I talk about it on the show all the time. It's very serious. I take a daily pill for anxiety medication. Have not had a single anxiety issue since 2016. Had a couple of weeks of bad anxiety. Couldn't figure it out. Couldn't get over it. I just decided to get on medicine and have never had a problem since. People that deal with it understand how terrible it is and how big of a deal it is. People that don't probably don't get it. So this is not me making light of that. But I do think we use that as just a catch-me-all for making a lot of grand changes sometimes that don't make a lot of sense. And this is one of those times. Starting in the fall of 2027, students entering the university's College of Literature or Sciences of the Arts, a bunch of things that are listed here, instead of traditional letter grades, they're basically going to get like a pass-fail for that first semester to ease them into school, is the way that this is going to work. So reading more about this here, first semester freshmen will receive a pass or no credit marks instead of standard letter grades on their transcripts starting in fall of 27. This applies automatically and mandatorily to all first-year freshmen in the LSA college only. Transfer students and other campuses, colleges at Michigan are not included. Final grades show up as a pass or no credit and do not impact the student's external GPA. So if you leave, it doesn't even matter. And it doesn't affect your GPA if you just had a really rough semester where you got bad grades because you didn't do the work. Professors still grade work and keep records internally for their own well-being, I suppose. These internal grades remain active for financial aid scholarships, athletic eligibility, and academic advising. The university aims to ease the transition to college, encouraging students to take academic risks and help lower student stress and mental health pressures.
It's not hard. It is soft. That's what it is. It's soft.
I mean, you know, in high school, we've talked about this, but like a lot of Fairfax County high school, like schools now, the lowest grade you can get is a 50. Like if you don't get something, they write down a 50.
Yeah, I would have challenged that, by the way, in my day.
If you don't do a project,
yeah,
like, you know what? I'm not going to take this test. You get a 50. Not a zero. Not like when Dad did it or when I did it, and I was like, I'm not going to do that homework. That zero kills you because that's 87 points lower than what you're hunting for.
Oh, yeah.
A 50 is only 37 points lower than that.
Yeah, that can average out. That 12 I got on that test couldn't.
So I just think that's wild.
No, man. It's terrible. But it goes to show you that this is a inmates running the asylum thing when it comes to higher education so much. Like the student body for so many years has been able to dictate what has to happen, right? In other words, in order to face some of these challenges, in order to face some of these things that are, it's supposed to be this sort of life internship before you go live on your own, you go have to, negotiate, navigate complex relationships and be challenged academically, et cetera. It's now, we need you to succeed and feel great about it so that you look good in the brochure, so that we don't have bad stats about people failing out and transferring, whatever. This was something the Ivy League figured out forever ago. When my friends went, all my really, really smart friends, and I had a bunch of them, went to Yale and Princeton and Columbia and Cornell and Harvard and all these other places.
That is the most St. Albans thing you've ever said.
Yeah, I'm telling you, they all did. And every one of them, to a man, told me it was much harder for us in high school than it was there. Because all they want you to do is get in and succeed.
Yeah.
Right? So the grade you would turn in something you know is probably B-plus work. There's your A-plus with a smiley face on top, simply because you're here. And the assumption is you can all do the work. So nobody's being challenged in kind of the same way. And it's about making people feel good instead of challenging them.
Yeah, just the idea of like, we want you to be comfortable, so it's okay if you don't do the work. Like, okay, that's the way we're doing it. What about the second semester? Are you going to ease me in there? That's going to be a pretty rude awakening.
Well, all it's going to take is some time. Some kid gets a D-plus, and they'll complain about the book they had to read. And, I'm telling you, that's where it goes. It's the kids run it now.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Let's go blitzing around the Beltway next. Speaking of around the Beltway, we got tickets, a four-pack for you. Freedom 250 Grand Prix. As soon as we return, you got to be listening. The race is this weekend. We got your tickets next.